Sober Purim? Is that even a thing? Is that even allowed?
Welcome to Consciously, a podcast focused on honest conversations for regular people seeking spiritual growth. Here's our host, Menachem Poznanski.
Consciously, welcome back. Okay, here we are. Episode 151. Took a little bit of a break. It's been a weird few months. Lots of stuff going on for me, and I'm grateful to be back here to join you. You know, it's been a few weeks where I've been like really itching to jump back into this, you know, remarkable privilege and, you know, kind of got out of the habit. So trying to jump back in. It was a wild month, as I mentioned in episode 151. Zoe and Jack got married, which was amazing. Went to Arizona, actually, which was really interesting. Going to that kind of place, being out in the great outdoors, as they say. Had a few other trips, and lots of meaningful things going on in the world. But we are days away from Purim, and that definitely has my thinker going, you know, in terms of like, what's the message for Purim? So I decided, it's a Friday afternoon, decided I would jump in and try to record something, get back into this habit. I've been thinking a lot about what to do with this podcast. You know, I think I'm going to, you know, try to bring back on some guests. I've been meeting some really remarkable people. I actually have a pretty significant guest that agreed to come on. So I'm excited. I'm going to work towards that. But also just, I don't know, figure out what's next. But I'm grateful to be here and grateful to have you here. I want to thank you for joining us in the Consciously podcast. If you're new, listening for the first time, do us a favor. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us 5 stars and a review if you want. Share us with your friends. Let them know. You can also check us out on our website, thelightrevealed.org. There's a great page on there that has all the episodes for the Consciously podcast, as all of our podcasts, including Joey Rosenfeld's awesome Mayanos to Home on YouTube, and also his Possibly Speaking podcast, among some other things, and Shmaya and Morty are really leaning into the Unconsciously podcast, which looking forward to seeing that come out super soon. So that should be great. But for the Consciously podcast, you can see our episodes by theme and and series. So if you're interested in the 12-step series, you can check that out. If you're interested in some of these what does that mean series, you can check those out. Also, you can check us out on Instagram, The Light Revealed, at The Light Revealed, Menachem Puz on Instagram and Facebook. And Zoe's been doing some really remarkable stuff. The Light Revealed team doing some really great posting, some stuff from Joey on Purim. We're going to put out a PDF, I think probably when this comes out, similar, of some great reflections for Purim. I did a series on just ideas that emerge from Kedushas Levi, from the Bardich River, about Purim, you know. So check that out, and we're thankful to have you. Okay, so enough commercials. Oh, also books. As you know, as I mentioned before, Consciously, 6 Steps to Living Vibrantly with Our Creator, and Stepping Out of the Abyss, A Jewish Guide to the 12 Steps. But a new book is coming out called Acceptance. I've been talking about it a little bit. It is out in days. It's Acceptance, an Inner Path Toward Healing. Joey also wrote the foreword for that. I'm really excited about that. And it's a great book. It does 2 things, just to give it a little bit of a commercial. It lays out what I've found to be a real plan for addressing and overcoming unwanted habits. It kind of parses out the separation between like pathological addiction and different layers of dependency and where habit comes in, and a Jewish perspective, definitely based in Chassidus and Pnimius HaTorah, and then also a plan of action that a person can put into place. But even more than that, it represents like a practice that a person can utilize to try to really gain a true sense of acceptance in their life. That's why it's called that. It's a program of acceptance to overcome unwanted habits, and a program to uncover unwanted habits to overcome unwanted habits in order to gain the freedom that comes along with the powerful spiritual principle of acceptance. So check that out. It should be on the Mosaica Press website super soon, and we'll be promoting it on The Light Revealed. And I think we're going to do like a launch party after Pesach, and I'm going to be in Israel, hopefully having an opportunity to share about it there. So lots of awesome, awesome things. This will be the second time, thank God, I'm in Israel, related to a project I'm working on called Genesis Treatment, which is an awesome inpatient, well, residential and outpatient program for substance abuse and trauma in the heart of Jerusalem, Merkaz Ha'ir Yerushalayim in Nachlaot. Anyway, okay, enough commercials. Let's get back on. Enough with the hakdamas. Okay, so it's Purim. And, you know, I swim in the world of sobriety. So, you know, what always comes up is, what does Purim look like for somebody who's sober? What's a sober Purim? What does that mean? And how do we do that? You know, how do we accomplish that? So before we try to unpack that, like what does sober Purim mean, we have to understand like what sober means. Like what does it mean to be sober? You know, in the world of recovery, oftentimes sober becomes synonymous with abstinent, right? But like sober is a wide-ranging word. And what if you don't need to be abstinent? Isn't moderation also sober? And in certain ways, I think moderation can be more sober than abstinent. Not to abstinence, not to dispel, by the way, or confuse anybody here, because I'm a big fan of abstinence-based models with substance abuse and alcoholism. But if we're talking about the sobriety of the entirety of our lives and how sobriety, being sober, can express itself in all the areas of our lives, there will be areas where sobriety requires abstinence from certain things, but there's for sure areas where sobriety requires the opposite, requires a learned process of measured moderation and other things as well. Even in the context of recovery, there's a lot of discussion about emotional sobriety. So that, you know, always leads me to ask, well, you know, what does that mean? What does emotional sobriety mean? It can't mean abstaining from emotions. I mean, there was definitely a time where I would have thought that, you know, like emotional sobriety means I don't have any feelings. But as anyone will tell you, you can't stop your feelings. You know, we have feelings, we feel things certain ways. You know, we can work on our reaction patterns to our feelings, and we can work on our thoughts and the way in which those thoughts influence our feelings, and the kind of feelings that emerge from mature thoughts versus feelings that emerge from immature thoughts. But emotional sobriety surely does not mean a lack of emotions. So what does all that mean? So perhaps, at least from the context and the framework of Judaism, we could look at Purim, which is supposed to be a time of a celebration of something that's opposite sober, and that might give us some context for what sobriety really means. And then hitherto, we might gain some context to what a sober Purim looks like. Okay, so on Purim, one of the reasons that sobriety becomes such a, you know, a catchword on Purim is because, you know, Purim, there's a mitzvah, there's a commandment for people to drink in excess, to drink more than they're used to. That was interesting. I said drink and then I had a sip of my coffee. Okay, so there's a mitzvah on Purim to drink more than one's used to. And the measurement that Chazal use in terms of how much should someone drink or how drunk someone should become is ad lo yada, that a person has to get drunk until he doesn't know the difference between blessing Mordechai and cursing Haman. And there's many different ways of framing that and understanding that and trying to understand what Chazal, what the rabbis meant by that. However, but there's no doubt that there's some kind of concept that ad lo yada, meaning getting to a place where a person does not know, has something to do with being drunk, being in an elevated state of consciousness, or a maybe less than elevated state of consciousness as a result of drinking. So what that implies, right, is that sober or not sober means no das. Sober means das, right? Because it's ad lo yada, until someone doesn't know, right? So a person, so when one is drunk, so to speak, or not sober, that means that they have no das. And then when they're sober, that means that they have das. So that now leads to the question is, well, what's das, right? There's many different words that the Torah uses to describe like knowledge or thoughts or thinking, right? But, and chachma, being a das, famously, right? But other words as well, seichel, haskel, right? So there's all sorts of different words that the Torah uses. Das is a particular word that describes a particular area of awareness and knowledge. So what's das? Because if das is the opposite of sober, by understanding what das is, we can maybe understand what sober means, maybe unpack what ad lo yada means, maybe unpack what emotional sobriety means, and maybe unpack what a sober Purim might look like. Okay, so what's das? So in Chassidus, this is particularly in the Tanya, the Alter Rebbe in the early chapters of Tanya discusses the three frames that are existent within the spheros, within the layers of reality that correspond to the intellect, right? Because there's 10 layers of reality, Chachma, Bina, Das, Chesed, Gvur, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malchus. And those 10 layers of reality have two categories. Certain categories refer to the areas of life that are data-centric, that are informational, that are mind-centric, right, within the context of a person, because maybe I should have said this earlier, but people, we are composed of the same 10 layers as all of reality, right? So just like a person has two different parts, an intellectual part and an emotional part, so to speak, quasi-metaphorically, everything in the universe has an intellectual part and an applied or emotional part. So there's Chachm, Bin, and Das, or the three intellectual traits, and Chesed, Gvur, Tiferes, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malchus are the seven emotive traits. So Chachm, Bin, and Das, the Alter Rebbe breaks down in Tanya, that Chachma refers to the aspect of the mind that's inspiration-oriented. Chachma is the area of our brains that get ignited when we face a problem, when we're stuck within the context of a reality, and then suddenly we grasp for a moment, and we encounter a problem, we don't know what to do, I don't know, I can't see a solution, and then suddenly a solution starts to crystallize. We start to think out of the box. We start to have an out-of-the-box perspective. Maybe the problem isn't a problem, or maybe there's a solution to the problem that I hadn't previously thought about. That kernel of inspiration, that ability for the brain to think outside of its constraints is called chachma. That's the highest place of the mind because it's the part of the mind that's not constrained by anything else, right? It's the mind that's closest, it's the highest part in the sense that it's the closest related to the essence. And it's the capacity to think outside of the box, the constriction of our space. Bina, on the other hand, is our capacity to conceive, to have conception of what's going on around us. That's, so to speak, to take the information, to take in what's around us, and to frame it, to box it in, to give it its context within what we're experiencing. So Chachma is thinking outside of the box. Bina is conceptualizing what we understand, right? So when a person's, let's say, problem solving, they encounter a problem and it feels like they're stuck. And then suddenly there's a flash of an idea, of a possibility of something they could do. And then they begin to work the idea out to figure out if and when it would actually work, right? So a person, let's say, is looking at a math problem, to use a different example, and they're not sure what to do. And then suddenly they have like a little bit of idea, but maybe if I, you know, carry over this number, maybe then the math problem will work out. And then they actually go through the process of working it through. So the first part would be chachma, that flash of inspiration would be chachma. The second part, the working it through and the place of kind of coming to awareness of it, would be called bina. So that's chachma and bina. What's das? So Chassidus explains that das is the capacity to internalize that information, which was really about creating a mind and heart synergy. It's bringing together my mind, what I know in my bina, what I've worked out, and making it present within my heart, within my emotions, within my instinctual self, so that there's a sense of synergy and the information now becomes more concretized, internalized in who I am, right? So you have out-of-the-box thoughts, in-the-box, so to speak, framing and thoughts, and then an internalization of kind of coming together where the different parts of me, the different ways of understanding become centralized. In our previous example, in the metaphor, you have a problem, right? Let's say a mathematical problem. And then you have a flash of an idea of how to resolve it. Then you work it through. And then you come to a place where once you've worked it through and now you work it out on the piece of paper, and now it becomes not only a worked out solution, but the solution becomes your new normal, right? Because it's, you see that it's true, right? So just like you see that 1 + 1 = 2, it's just as obvious as 1 + 1 = 2, which is now all of my reality is based on that simple mathematical equation. And everything we do is based on the equation that if you take one and if you add another one, it equals two. That's logical. It makes sense. So too, even something more complex now becomes internalized as my reality. So that is Das. Now, if we go back to some of the questions we asked before, like what's emotional sobriety, right? Because if Das equals sobriety, so then emotional sobriety now would start to make sense to us, because emotional sobriety would be the space where my feelings and my heart have synergy, where what I feel about a circumstance and how I think or how the ideal that I have for a circumstance are kind of together. That's a space where I'm in an emotional sobriety. I'm allowed to feel a sense of serenity, of acceptance, as we talked about earlier. I feel okay with my reality because I'm not in conflict between different parts of myself. My feelings are not over there, and my thoughts are over there. My ideas are over there, and my ideals, how I wish things were, are somewhere else. But rather, instead, there's a sense of like, I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. It makes sense. I accept this. I might not like it, but I'm okay with the fact that I don't like it. I'm mourning the fact that I encountered a circumstance that's less than pleasant, and I'm come to terms with it, and I can see how it's purposeful and useful, and I can see how there's missionhood and destiny in this process, and that is emotional sobriety, right? Which kind of makes sense if you think about it. If someone were going to say the word emotional sobriety, that would always kind of make sense. So sobriety equals Das. Das equals a synergy between the mind and the heart, between the midos, between the emotions and the intellect, right? An internalized sense of reality of what's real, of what I see, where my thoughts and my feelings about them come together. And emotional sobriety, right? Sober equals Das. Emotional sobriety is that capacity to kind of be present within my conscious self with whatever my reality is. Now, the distortion of all that would be when our feelings and thoughts don't match our ideals, which causes a measure of frustration. And often what happens, and we're not talking about being disappointed about how things are, being sad about how things are, because I think, and I have experienced that you can be sad about how things are, but at the same time, like be okay with that sadness. I'm unhappy about how things are, but I accept where I am, right? But if I'm not okay with where I am, if my thoughts tell me that things should be that way, and my feelings say that it should be a different way, and my ideals, my expectations are an entirely other place, I can be at a place of disequilibrium, a complete lack of connectedness and synergy between the different parts of myself. And I end up in a place of the exact opposite of acceptance, and I experience the world in a deep place of distortion and unhappiness. I'm very unhappy. I live in resentment in those moments and very disconnected from the reality. So if a person was going to have a lack of Das, right? If emotional sobriety means that place where I found a way to draw synergy between my ideals and my thoughts and my feelings, and a lack of Das, right? A distortion of Das would be a place where I don't have a synergy between my thoughts and my feelings and my ideals, right? And which leads to a place of unhappiness and disequilibrium and disconnection from reality, sadness, depression, yayush, despair, right? Resentment, fear, anxiety, right? So that would be a lack of Das. Now, going back to one of the points we were making earlier, the whole idea of Purim is to be ad de lo yada, right? Beyond Das. So it can't be that the goal of Purim is to not be in Das, which is a place of synergy of thoughts and feelings, right? So what is ad de lo yada? So obviously, there's really now what parses out of this thing, out of these thoughts, is three levels. You have a lack of das, right? Which is a lack of synergy, which is a place of distortion. You have a place of das, which is a place of synergy, which is a place of connectedness between my thoughts, my feelings, my ideals, and my conscious self. That's das, sobriety. And then you have that which is adaloya das, beyond mind-heart synergy, which is a place, a spiritual place of letting go of what I think and what I feel and what I expect and even what would be ideal, to be fully present, to let go of all of my opinions about what is, in order to be fully present within the moment. And that's really the key to Purim. That's the key of Adal Yada. That's the concept of drinking, of Adal Yada Bein Arar Haman LeBaruch Mordechai, to not know the difference in cursing Haman and blessing Mordechai. The schools of Hasidus explain that that whole concept means to transcend that place of having an opinion about Haman is bad and Mordechai is good. Because it's complicated, because the whole story of the Megillah is a story where it seems like Haman building a 50-foot, which I think we've talked about on the podcast, building a 50 Amos, 100-foot gallows to hang Mordechai seems like a bad thing. And then you turn around and it turns out to be the best thing in the world, because the next day he's at the feast with Esther and Ahasuerus, and you know, he begs on the couch for his life from Esther, and Ahasuerus comes in and he gets frustrated and he looks up, and what does he see? The 100-foot gallows that Haman built for Mordechai, who earlier that morning Ahasuerus had taken out, right? Had sent out Haman to parade him around the streets and say, this is who the king wants to honor. So here, the chutzpah of Haman to build a gallows for that guy, Haman himself is hung. So while it seems like Haman building a 100-foot gallows and then going to the king, and then the king asking Haman, what should I do for someone who the king wants to honor? That all seems like it's going bad, but it turns out that it's actually not like that. My opinion was actually off. That's actually the best thing in the world. That was the perfect circumstances to make a complete turnaround. Or Esther Hamalka, it would seem like the biggest tragedy in the world for the niece of the Tzaddik Hador to be taken to the king's palace and for her to have to pretend that she's not Jewish. That seems like it would be the worst thing. It's objectively bad to be subjected to having to live with a wicked guy like Ahasuerus. But really, it turned out, in the end, to be the best. So Adlo Yada Purim, this idea of drinking until we let go between Mordechai and the blessing of Mordechai and the curse of Haman, means the awareness that there's even a reality beyond what I know to be true, beyond Chachma, beyond Bina, and beyond Das. That even when I've gone through that process of Chachma, Bina, and Das, right, to internalize the reality around me and to really frame it and to understand it, right, and to bring it within, right, and to really truly internalize it with thoughts and feelings, there's also a reality beyond that. There's something beyond that there's a part of me that's connected to, right? Like, for example, in the context of our souls, right, there's five layers to our souls. There's Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, and Yechida. There's five layers to the human soul. There's an aspect, the Yechida, which is the highest place of the soul, that's in that space of the soul, is totally unified with God's holy throne, meaning it's a part of ourselves that's not connected to this reality, but connected to a transcendent reality beyond. So the whole idea of Purim, of this Adlo Yada, the whole idea of not being sober, so to speak, on Purim, is not an idea of the opposite of sobriety, which is a lack, right, which is a distortion of the das and a lack of cognizance of truth, right, which is often sometimes where drinking takes us, but rather to leverage drinking for those who are in that space to come to a place of transcendent awareness that is even above the das, even above the awareness, the internalized awareness of my thoughts, my feelings, and my ideas. So going back to what Chazal say that, so why, okay, sorry, reframe, reframe. So now, why wine? Why drinking? Right? That's the question. Why do that through drinking? Why don't we do that through meditation or like fast, right? We fast Yom Kippur is Yom Kippurim, day like Purim. So in order to achieve the level of living like an angel. We fast, we don't eat, we wear white clothes. We spend the whole day in prayer. And on Purim, we do something else that's even greater than that, which is we engage in what would appear to be frivolity, right? So why is that? So Chazal say, because nichnas yayin yatzesod, because when we take in wine in a place of holiness on Purim, right? For those that drink, right? When we drink, right? When a person drinks, he takes in the wine, and it allows the sod, the internal, the most internal secret place within the self, our most truest self, to come out. Because normally, right, we kind of, let's say, imagine the echidah of our lives, that part of ourselves that's unified with the holy throne. We would think, okay, that's transcendent in the sense that it's way above us. But in actuality, the part of ourselves that's most connected to God is not further out, but rather further in. It exists on a more quantum level of our existence, not above us. It's not away from us, right? But rather further and further in. So the sod of our lives, the secret of our lives, that space of our lives, that's deep down within, deep, deep, deep down beneath the layers of consciousness within the context of this world, and that quantum spiritual level of self, right, is in sod. And a person drinks in the right way, in the proper way that is meant for on Purim, not in the frivolous way that oftentimes people engage in. It allows the person to let out their truest self, right? Which is the whole idea of Adaloyada, to transcend Das, to overcome, to go beyond supra sober, right? It's not just the opposite, right? It's not beneath Das, but rather above Das, beyond Das, right? Supra sober. So as we kind of continue on that journey to try to unpack what does sober Purim mean, right? What does it mean to have a sober Purim? The goal actually would not be to have a sober Purim, right? In the sense of being the opposite of the distortion of Das, which is oftentimes the case for those who have a history and a propensity or a nature to misuse alcohol and substances, for whom, which, you know, utilizing yayin, right, nichnas yayin yatzes sod, to bring the sod out, usually for them, the equation has to be shifted. It's more yatze yayin in order to nichnas sod, right? They have to get the wine out of their lives in order to connect with the internality, the inner truth, right? By letting go of the false idol that often is the drinking. But the goal of Purim is not per se to be in a place that's sub-das, but rather just as the recovering person is seeking to find a sobriety in all the areas of their lives, which again might mean abstaining in some areas, moderating in others, but equanimity and connectedness ultimately in all the areas with emotional sobriety, the goal of Purim is to transcend to a place of supra sober, right? An ultimate place of sober. So whether we're drinking this Purim or not, the key is to celebrate and to connect, to transcend the levels of what we know, of what we think we know about our lives, right? And begin to see that oftentimes what seems to be the worst is oftentimes the best. And as Rabbi Shays Taub, if you want to look back at a much earlier episode from the first year of Consciously, Rabbi Shays Taub came on and he pointed out that in a certain way, addicts and alcoholics in recovery know this, they live with this on a daily basis, and they know this in ways that really transcend the way that many of us know it otherwise, right? Because it would seem that the worst thing that could happen to a person is to be an alcoholic or to have experienced a trauma that brought them to a place of abject destruction. But oftentimes when you speak to people that are actively involved in a vibrant recovery, what you find is they'll say is that I'm a grateful alcoholic, right? I'm grateful for my alcoholism because even though it brought much pain to my life, the meaningfulness that I've drawn from it, the transcendent perspective that it's given me, the new set of glasses that I now have and my capacity and ability to connect and be present and help others far transcends anything I think I would have experienced otherwise. And that whole idea, that ability to be present, even within a space that seems objectively bad, and to see the good in that, is really the essence of what Purim is about. That's the essence of Ad Lo Yada, to transcend what we know, to be exactly where we are, to be in that place of acceptance, in that place of love, and ultimately to feel the serenity of the equanimity between our thoughts, our feelings, our ideals, and then even more, to just be, to be where we are. And so on this Purim, the meditation, the reflection is to take a moment, to take a deep breath, and just to be. And maybe to look for all those areas in our lives, to reflect, right? To dream and reflect about the moments in our lives that seemed to be the worst, that led to something that ultimately was the best, beyond our wildest conception. That idea that Geula is the awareness, is what we're going to come to when we realize that Gullus is everything that we needed, right? That this is we are exactly where we are meant to be, even though we are in a space that's unideal, right? Therefore, and in doing so, to transcend the limitation of our lives, to not only be out of the box, and not only to be within the box, and not only to be internalized, but to be above that, to transcend that, and to connect ultimately with our sod, with our true inner self, and with our highest place of conception, which is unified with God. Chag Sameach, Freilich and Purim. Hope everyone celebrates with a lot of fun and a lot of happiness and a lot of joy, and most of all, a lot of safety. Much love. It's great to be back.
Thank you for joining the Consciously family. Consciously is brought to you by The Light Revealed, a social media publisher bringing messages of Jewish spirituality and recovery to whoever is looking for them. Consciously is made possible by the kindness of the Capellius family in memory of Tzipporah Bas Ravaram. If you've enjoyed this podcast, you can give us a review and subscribe wherever else you get your podcasts. We love connecting with you, so please check out our website, thelightrevealed.org. Feel free to email us at thelightrevealed@tlrfamily.org. Our producer is Morty Schwartz. Our social media content team is Zoe Poznanski and Tehilo Nassanian. The assistant to the regional co-host is Shmaya Honickman, and our music is by Eitan Katz featuring Zusha. Thank you for joining, and we wish you the most blessed day in only revealed ways.